We're already practicing. The topic for today is monasticism in everyday life, which is actually a great topic. And Robert and Gloria and Lisa are giving me a perfect opportunity to not take myself too seriously. And I appreciate that, actually. We were just talking on the way up here. I think I was walking up with Joycey about, everybody's heard me talk now. It's such a small thing, but it had such a profound impact on me spiritually to have had my wallet be stolen, as I'm sure you've all heard. But for those of you who haven't, I had a month off in July, and not far into the month, my wallet was lifted from my purse in Safeway. And very interesting. This is totally nothing to do with today, but the detective came and saw me 2 days ago. They found the three young people who stole it. And he said they work in teams. And he said, you know, they target certain people. I said, you don't have to be so nice. You mean older people. And I said, it only makes me mad because I really am of sound mind still. He said, it's not that. He said, they know that as you get older, people tend to get more kind. He said, they probably came up to you and said, can you help me? Which is exactly what happened. And he said to me, if somebody had asked me that, I might have very easily said, I'm too busy. He said, but you would never say, somebody asked you for help. He's looking at me. He says, you're always going to say yes. And I said, that's true. So he was going to charge them. He's actually taking them to trial, which sort of broke my heart. But one of the felonies is elder abuse. I said, I know. But the reason I brought it up right now is because my wallet was stolen on a Sunday night, and Monday I was supposed to come up to the farm for 3 days. I mean, it took years to plan those 3 days to really clear them, get up here. Of course, I had to cancel the whole thing. Now I'm here. It's the next time I'm here, and I'm thinking, you've got to put it on the calendar again and tell Master nothing can get my way. Yeah. Anyway, it was an interesting experience, and it really does have to do with this topic because I took a month off, which took a lot of planning, and I thought it was going to be a very inward, quiet, not seclusion, but sit in my house in the community, which I rarely get to do, and just read and learn three new chants. And this was my plan, and have dinner in the community, things that just never happen in my world. And none of it happened. And about every second or third day, I'd be sitting at my altar, and I would literally say to Master, you're sure, right? You're sure about what's happening. This is really mine. And then I'd sort of get, yeah, it's absolutely yours. Okay. And just move on with whatever it was. It was interesting. It was a very out in the material world month. Totally different than what I thought. And an extraordinary opportunity to practice, to take all of the practical stuff in life and move it into a spiritual, expansive realm, which is really, it really is what monasticism is as we know it. You know, Swamiji, in one of his talks, relates the story in the AY. I might have trouble remembering some of it because it's not fresh on my mind right now, but you remember he wouldn't bow before the stone image, and he was looking for a particular saint. That's whose name I'm going to forget, but it doesn't matter. They were all great saints. But it's who he was looking for in the Himalaya. And he wouldn't bow. He just said, I'm not bowing before this stone image. He was kind of a little arrogant about it. And everybody kept misdirecting him to this saint. And he wandered and wandered, and he couldn't get where he was going. When he finally got there, which happened other than how he expected, of course, the saint just appeared on the path when the timing was right. And the saint said to him, first thing, why didn't you bow to that stone image? And Master was taken, like, how did he know? I mean, it was days ago. And he said to Master, where do you find God? And Master said, everywhere. And he said, he's in that stone image as much as he's anywhere. And the way Swamiji relates that story in this one of the treasures talks, a talk he gave, I think, in the 80s. But he says that was the moment where the whole new concept of monasticism was introduced for our time. Because, you know, prior to this, in Kali Yuga, monasticism looked very different. And it had to look different. It had to be an either or, very clear boundaries, because it was, such a material world and with such incredibly material values. I mean, when you think of what was going on at the time of St. Francis, where shipping was just coming in and trade, the whole concept of trade was happening, and people could finally get their hands on commodities that they had no access to before. So beautiful cloth, beautiful dyes, you know, exotic foods, all that was going on. The world was excitedly and in a very materially expanding way, doing just that. And when somebody like St. Francis came, or St. Teresa, they had to be very clear and definitive and much harder about what monasticism says. I don't think most of us could in this day and age relate well to having to flog ourselves repeatedly if we had a negative thought. I mean, I can't even imagine. I wouldn't be alive by this time in my life, that's for sure. I mean, the brutal kind of punishment that Francis put himself through, but like all great saints, it was really for us. And at that time, that's how it had to be. That was Kali Yuga. Now it's Dwapara, an age of energy and things happening very differently. And Master was really being helped by Babaji and by these great saints, and certainly by Sri Yukteswar, to see how is it that you, Paramahansa Yoganandaji, are going to change the world. And Swami says, in that moment, the seed was planted. And you can see how, because the message that was coming through then is our message, the way we live on this path, that we live completely in the world and not of it at all. But the form of monasticism that Master and then Swamiji for us has been trying to share with us is not about rejecting the world. You know, to realize that we can love the giver of the gifts and even enjoy the gifts, whatever they are. We could talk about them. They can be relationship, a brand new home. I mean, it can be anything, even good health. But we can't worship the gifts. And for so many years, thousands of years. We're talking the yugas. So it was a long slide down, really seriously, that people were practicing, worshiping what's in the world. So we can see why, even though we say we're in ascending Dwapara, and in so many ways it doesn't feel that way. The world looks very dark, very difficult, but it's like turning the most massive ship imaginable 180 degrees. You know, you're down here, you're down, and you're heading up. So it's a big turn of energy. But Master came right at that time to help kick this off and to help this happen and to say to us, and Swamiji has just said it so beautifully, you know, just one of those moments when I was reading different things, just to get the right ideas in my mind for today. And I just found myself bowing at his feet again. Because even that little thing about understanding the depth of the meaning of that story in the AY, I certainly would not have been able to grasp that the way it was intended, like a change in the entire universe, in the entire spiritual universe as we know it, that's what was really happening in that one answer. God is in everything. And then for him to be able to come and start teaching us that what we need to do is find the spiritual principle, take everything practical in our lives, everything, and expand it into a spiritual realm. So it's not the things in our lives. I was telling somebody earlier that there have been a group of people who have been asking me to hold a gathering. Many people whose partners are not on the spiritual path or not on it as we're on it, or people who don't live in the community. I mean, it's us, not me necessarily, but it's this group. Well, it is me because I'm with a partner who's not on this path, and I work out in the world. I mean, very much out in the world. Honestly, even through the church, I work out in the world, you know, because everybody new that comes to that church I meet, and they're brand new. And it's so hard for, I want to say people, but it's hard for us too. This is what we're all working on. The whole goal of our lives is monasticism. Monasticism is, in a certain way, as we hold it, it's the only reality. It's literally the only reality, because every other way of thinking of anything, of doing anything, actually has us focused out. And that's not what we're here to do. Those of us in this room know there is one goal in life, and that is to find God. People can know it or not know it. You don't have to be aware of it. You don't have to be able to practice it all the time. Quite frankly, you don't even have to want it all the time. Because, again, who in this room could say they haven't acted out at times and just decided to be bad, whatever that means, to just do something off the path? This past Sunday at service, it just came to me. I said to the whole congregation and the whole world that was watching, and right before God, that's for sure, you know, that for the first 10 days of that month of July, when I was going to be so inward and focused on God, I read, I forget the number now, but, and I sort of made it up in Sunday service because it didn't matter, but I think in 10 days I read 5 historical fiction books. That's what I did every day, all day. I went out of my life that was going at over the speed limit, let me just put it that way, for a long time. And I said, oh, now you're just going to sit and be quiet and still. And this mind was not about to go right into 4 hours a day of meditation, which was my thought, that I would keep doing my regular meditation, add to it, and by the last 2 weeks, I'd be meditating minimum of 4 hours a day, which I've done in seclusions. I love doing, not this time. I read historical fiction, and every time I picked up the next book, I would say to myself, do you really want to be doing this? Yes, I do. I mean, it just happens. And I realized, you know, Swamiji has this analogy. He talks about it when he talks about marriage or relationships, but he's talking about it with marriage when, you know, it doesn't need to be marriage. Anybody in this room who's had anybody that you really want to share these teachings with, you really want them to know the teachings. And it's all good. The reasons are good. But if anybody's ever been successful in forcing these teachings on anybody, I'd like you to come and talk to me because I've never seen it. And Swamiji says, his analogy is, it's like you go out fishing. When the fish first starts tugging, you have to give it a little bit of room. You don't start reeling it in right away. You give it a little more line. Really, to let it, it's a horrible image for me, but to really get on that hook, then you can, then it's, you're going to be able to pull it in. But it's actually a really good analogy that he uses. But even with ourselves, you know, the truth is, when I wasn't ready to sit for 4 hours a day, it's not just that I wouldn't do it, I couldn't do it, it would have been really bad for me. And then one day I woke up and said, okay, you know, enough, 5, good enough, stop. And part of it for me, interestingly, is that I was so out in the world. I had to be so out in the world. How was I going to go 2 days in a row to the DMV, 3.5 hours first day, 4.5 hours second day, and maintain a calm center if I didn't come into my calm center? You know, you think of it. And then the third day wasn't off. It was 4.5 hours in Social Security. And it just went on and on and on all week. How do we do that? Because that's where the great grist for our mills is in terms of monasticism. Not just sitting in a spiritual community and having a wonderful 4 weeks where nobody disturbs you. You get to put a little sign up that says, "Thank you for respecting my silence." And people do. That's pretty much of a miracle. How many people have that in their life? You know? It's just, it's really, I mean, really, when you think of it, I was asked to be on a radio show one day last week. They were doing an hour of a radio show. And I wanted to do it at Barry's house because I didn't want the trains there. So I said to him, "Honey, I need to be here. And I need it to be really quiet. Are you going to be okay about that?" Means you probably have to be up in your study. And no. I'm so happy about this. You sit right here in my, I have a meditation space. It's a whole room in his house. And I'll be very quiet, he says. And four times I'm walking around with a phone and a headset. And I had to go to him and go, you know, because what does quiet mean to the world? What is let anybody go? You know, he's banging cabinets in the kitchen, and this is all being amplified onto my radio show. And I'm saying, this is not quiet. I couldn't say that, but it's like, you know, be nice about it, Shanti. No, we don't get, the world is not made for us like that. But our job is to take everything from the outside, bring it in, and then we always say this, we always say raise it up. But if we think of it this way, take it from the particular to the spiritual, expansive, whatever it is. So, you have a child that you love. You really love your child. If we all know, if you get too personally involved in that, there is so much pain waiting for you. Inevitably, it just happens. It's rare that it wouldn't happen that way. Number one, you take yourself back, I don't know how many lifetimes. I could say 5 or 10, but it's probably more like 1,000 because the numbers are so astronomical. Because you actually let yourself just get caught up in thinking that your happiness depends on that child making it, going to the right school, even being healthy. I mean, as serious as these things can get, we fall in love. How many people in the world think that marriage is the solution to their problems? The vast majority. We could go on and on with examples. But if we take that love that we feel, I'll bet everybody in this room, or at least 90% of you, have fallen in love. I always love that when I think of it. Why is it called falling in love? Why don't we call it rising in love? It would be so much, it tells us what's about to happen, but we don't hear it. Every time I give a talk about any of this, and I think, I hate that phrase. But it's really true. When you fall in love, it is such a beautiful feeling in that moment. You feel anything's possible. You just, I mean, everybody's had it. For me, long ago, many loves ago, I quit wanting to put it into words. I never wanted to talk to anybody about it. To be honest, sort of the way I feel about God right now and my love affair with God, because as soon as you share it, you put it in somebody else's mind and they can't hold it where it belongs. I mean, certainly the God, certainly once you're really, you've fallen in love with God. But even when you've just fallen in love, even if you try and tell somebody how much you love your children, there are no words for that. It's an experience of the heart. And if instead of putting it out, repeating it, making it, it's just the it. I mean, we could list so many examples here of putting it out there so that we're using words, we're using our senses, we're appealing to somebody else's senses, we're taking this huge risk of sharing with them something so sacred that they may or may not be able to realize. And as soon as we do that, and we're talking about, no, it's not that about him. What I really loved about him, and before you know it, the him is reduced to, well, really, to a human status. I mean, it's really what it is, which that he was or she was or the child was all along. But we make it more that way. But if instead we took that experience of the heart and we remembered God is in everything and everyone, and we cultivated that, and we developed habits in our life that could help us remember, because otherwise we do not remember. You know, I'm telling you stories about myself because it's much nicer to do that than to tell you stories about other people. I don't want it, because that can seem much more negative. But this July and August, and I really want, the reason I'm sharing this because it was so poignant. We've kicked off these Kriya Satsang groups, and we've really recreated Sadhaka Prep and Raja Yoga, and we have these Wednesday night series going on. There's Sunday service. There's at least one Saturday a month where I teach. There's all of the 22 events, I think, that we put on a year, you know, whatever it is. This is a very full life. It's a very full life. And I'm, not just me, but all of the people who were involved. I mean, Navashan sitting there, everybody else may have their own version of this experience, but he is at the church a minimum of four nights a week, and he's there every morning by 10, sometimes many times earlier. Weekends are our big time on. You know, I'm just saying to you, when we said, let's plan nothing for July and August so that we can not relax but have choices, so that honestly, so that I could be home with Barry a little bit or have an evening at home alone, not needing to accomplish anything or prepare for the next whatever, making the next soup, preparing the next talk, organizing the next event. It didn't matter what it is. There's always, and it's not just one thing. It's all those things all the time. July and August were sacred. And when I came to July and August, I mean, I've told you about the wallet. Turns out Barry got quite ill for a few weeks. Many things went on, and I could not stay inside. Now, I already told you that I kept checking in with Master. But do you know, when I came back late August and tried to give my first talk, I was up there saying to myself, this isn't it. You know, it's like that joke. This isn't it. This isn't it. I couldn't get it. I thought to myself, this is me. I've been on this particular path for exactly 40 years, but probably thousands of lives seeking, all of us. Remember, we are the one in a thousand. And we've been doing this a long time, 2 months of needing to deal in the world more, 2 months. And I could feel myself. Just yesterday, I said to somebody, I think I'm back. You know, whatever day this is in September, I think I'm back. Staying in my house in the community every night now for a week and a half, meditating in the mornings there, being at the church office. You know, it is hard. You take yourself away from this support, and with all the conscious effort, it's a challenge. And we have to keep doing it. I stayed conscious about it. But we have to find ways to remind ourselves that we say, I am not going to get stuck in any of the particulars of life. I'm going to take them from here, from ego consciousness, which is always delusion. Always. It's always contractive, and it's always delusion. It can be enjoyable every once in a while. I mean, you can do many things in the world and with your family and everywhere else that can be enjoyable, but nothing that happens at the ego level nothing. This is not hyperbole or a misspeak will feed the soul. It doesn't. The soul has its own language. The ego cannot understand soul realities, spiritual realities. It's impossible. We have to be consciously, thoughtfully elevating, transmuting. Really, in the end, we have to. This is something Navashan was just talking about this past week in Raja Yoga. The whole goal is to take all of the emotions and transmute them into wisdom. Sounds easy. I say emotions here, heart chakra. We're already up at the fourth. We're already moving into formlessness. Really, we're in Dwapara Yuga. Things couldn't get better. But you try and go from here to here, it's hard. But that is the way of the path. From the emotions to wisdom. Wisdom is a soul quality. Wisdom means we're using discretion. We're using perseverance. We're doing everything we can do. We're showing up in the right places at the right times. You know, I recently went up to, I hope I don't embarrass her, Suzanne's home to visit her on her birthday. I just decided to drive up. She graciously allowed that so I could take her out for lunch on her birthday because she's one of these people who lives far enough away that she's always coming to us. Almost never does anybody go to her. I thought, I'm going to do it this time. Everywhere you look in her home, everywhere, it was a joy walking into that house, is God reminding. Everywhere. Every piece of art. Her mouse pads have imprints of all of the pieces of our path on them. I mean, literally, I'm just saying it to you, I could go on. But even her mouse pads, she works on the computer a lot. I said to her, I want those. God bless her, she sent me one. You know, a big, beautiful picture of Master, my mouse, every day, all day. These things are really important. Ultimately, we all know. Ultimately, you cannot say it enough. You can't think it enough. We have to meditate. We can talk all we want. We can look at pictures all we want. We can be around other soul-seeking individuals. But ultimately, we have to meditate because ultimately, that is the only place where we will find true monasticism and in this day, in daily life. And I'll just close with one thing and then ask for a couple questions if there are any. You know, many of you have heard me tell this story, and I'm only going to tell the short version, though it's a beautiful story, always worth the retelling, but where Master literally came to me one night when I was deciding to leave Barry. I was just deciding I was done with the relationship. This is now 18 years ago, but, and Master sort of came. And right in the middle of my explaining to Barry why I had to separate from him, he wasn't on a spiritual path, it was really going to hold me back, we couldn't even talk about things because we were talking at two different levels. All true. It was all true. Master popped into my head, and he said to me, as long as the two of you are in physical bodies, he's yours. So what are you going to do to make this right? And in an instant, this was not me. Believe me, this was not me. He came and he said, every time you look at him, every time you see God looking back at you. And, you know, as many of you have heard me say, I really have tried to practice that. I mean, I've really tried. I made a commitment to never argue with him again. And in all these years, if we've had a couple of arguments, it's a lot. That's pretty good. I mean, it's just I go to start explaining the truth to him. I'm certain he'll see it this time. And somebody grabs my tongue. You know, it's like, no. Barry and I are 30-some years into it, and we would still argue over the same exact things that we argued about in year one. What does that tell you? It's like, how stupid would I have to be to keep doing that? But it is mostly what we do in all of life. But here's why I'm sharing it with you. Barry has become for me, and you know, Barry's a very good man, and he loves me, and he loves me well. So this is not like I was in an abusive relationship. He's smart, he's funny, he's many things. But he has become for me like that stone idol was for master. And we can all find places like that. I see Barry, it's about God. I see Barry, it's about God. I am touching his feet more times. I don't touch his feet because he doesn't even like to have his feet touched. And what is that? You know? But it's not, I mean, the point is, it's not about really doing it out there. It's about what's going on in here. Exactly who that man is. Exactly who he is. And believe me, almost everybody who's ever met me in my life looks at me like, what are you doing with that man? We could not be more different. We couldn't. And he's sort of antisocial and he doesn't ever want to be around people. Most of you, maybe if you've seen him, but you've never said two words to him. Those of you who know him, you know what I mean. He's very different than me. But he became my, what's the word? Pole star. He became my touchstone. Anything can be that. Now, when Master says you have to love one person unconditionally before you can find God, it's not just that you have to find one. It is true. He said it. I'm not denying what he said. But we have to find many things to do in this life and turn them into purely spiritual experiences. All about wisdom, integrity, all of those spiritual qualities. You could think of the way you speak to somebody at work, just anything. I mean, we could go on and on with a list. Take little things and spiritualize them, because soon you find that they coalesce. And before you know it, it's really easy to get up in the front of the line after 4.5 hours and to say to the woman, God, you look like you're working so hard. I've been standing in this line sending you energy. And she just, tears just start coming down her face. I didn't think when I get up there, this is what I'm going to do because it's a good thing. It's this natural outpouring of the heart with uplifted energy. People see it and they respond in the world and weird things happen. You know, you get upgraded to first class things just happen. You think you have nothing to do with it, but years and lifetimes of this new monasticism, of being able to be in the world and not of it, that is the main thing that Master and Swamiji, you know, Master got upset dealing with married couples in Mount Washington and Encinitas. They were too hard. They would just bond together. You've all heard this, and they would defend each other. Oh, you don't have to listen to him. He's being mean to you, couples would say. He finally said no more married couples living here. Fortunately, Swamiji picked up the baton and did what Master asked spiritual communities. Nobody's saying to us, leave your partner. Nobody's saying to us, come in out of the world and don't work out there. But we're all saying, take what you're getting here and uplift and expand it. Practice it. Don't let any moment of your life go by that isn't informed by all of the spiritual principles that we talk about all the time. Okay.